ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, bad news for Australians struggling with the cost of living as inflation rises faster than expected. Also, another outage leaves 14,000 Optus customers without service in Victoria. And deep in the Sumatran rainforest, conservationists find one of the world's rarest flowers.
This one is a super rare one. Hardly anyone has seen it. And to my mind, it's the most beautiful. It's kind of like white with these big red spots and then the reverse of that on the petals. It's just crazy.
First this evening, households and businesses are being hit by rising costs again as new figures from the Bureau of Statistics show a rise in inflation. It was 3.8% for the 12 months to October. That's up from 3.6% a month earlier. For those paying off a mortgage, it all but wipes out the chance of an interest rate cut next month. Diana Damjanovic reports.
If you were hoping for another drop in interest rates, this is a bad set of numbers, and the stress caused by inflation is reflected in the number of people calling the National Debt Helpline.
People are struggling with a variety of issues. It's really rarely one, and they'll be under pressure from all directions.
Dr. Dominique Mayrick is the CEO of Financial Counselling Australia, which runs the helpline. She says 30% of people who call for help are in full-time work, and many have a mortgage.
On the National Debt Helpline, people are seeking support for issues with difficulty paying for their housing costs, difficulty covering their energy costs, difficulty paying for any credit that they have, and a whole variety of things that they'll be under pressure from, and often all at once, so under siege from all directions at once.
Dr. Mayrick says the main things people are struggling with are housing, bills and tax debt, and debts relating to credit cards, buy now, pay later and personal loans. The helpline's received 170,000 calls in the past 12 months.
For people who are already struggling, this modest increase, you're really going to feel it. If you're right on the edge, you're going to feel it. But the other side of it is that it's a little bit of a blow to hope that things are going to get easier sooner.
Economists were surprised by today's figures. Annual inflation has risen to 3.8% in October, up from 3.6% in September. It's largely been driven by increases to the costs of housing and electricity. The trimmed mean, which is the Reserve Bank's preferred measure of inflation, also rose, albeit more gradually, up from 3.2% to 3.3%. It means inflation is well above the RBA's target range of 2 to 3%. The opposition says the government's failed to rein in price rises. Shadow Treasurer Ted O'Brien spoke today at the National Press Club.
With just 29 days until Christmas, this is the worst possible news for struggling mortgage holders who can now kiss goodbye to any rate cut at all.
Speaking in Parliament, the Treasurer Jim Chalmers defended his performance and the government's wider policy agenda.
This is why it's so important that we continue to responsibly roll out the cost of living relief that those opposite oppose, Mr. Speaker. It's why it's so important that we've been able to improve the budget compared to the mess that we inherited from those opposite. It's why it's so important that we're rolling out those tax cuts, we're rolling out the cost of living relief, we're strengthening Medicare to try and ease some of the pressure that we acknowledge that Australians are still feeling around the kitchen table.
One of the biggest contributors to inflation was the cost of housing, which grew by 5.9%. Electricity costs also surged. They grew by 37% over the 12 months to October. Deputy Chief Economist at AMP Diana Musina says that's because some government subsidies for energy came to an end.
Over the past 12 months, electricity has had a huge increase, up by about 37%, but it's only because the rebates have rolled off. So this time a year ago, it looked like electricity inflation was, you know, basically non-existent.
Jim Chalmers has indicated he could announce further energy bill subsidies for households in the upcoming mid-year budget. Prices for food and non-alcoholic beverages, recreation and culture rose 3.2% from a year earlier. Diana Musina says inflation is too high for the Reserve Bank to cut interest rates anytime soon. But she says a little perspective is needed when reading today's figures because they're partly the result of the RBA's new way of measuring monthly inflation.
I think what we can take away from it is that inflation is still too high for the RBA's liking. It's above the target band. But I think it's going to be a volatile measure because it's going to be this new measure derived every single month. And for that reason, it's going to be more volatile than usual.
AMP's Diana Musina says it's likely inflation will slow down, but the Reserve Bank won't be taking any chances.
Now, I wouldn't say that there was anything new in the data that we didn't already know. We've known that services inflation is still a problem. So, yeah, I didn't take anything new from the data, but I think the RBA will just be thinking that they need to proceed cautiously from here.
The RBA meets to make its next decision on interest rates on the 9th of December.
Diana Damjanovic. The beleaguered telecommunications company Optus has suffered another blow to its reputation today, with an hours-long outage affecting about 14,000 customers in Victoria. The company says the shutdown was caused by vandals who were attempting to steal valuable copper cable, but instead cut a critical fibre cable in the ground. It's the third Optus outage in recent months, and the federal opposition is urging the government to review the nation's telecommunications infrastructure. Kathleen O'Connor has more.
14,000 Optus customers were unable to make calls on their mobile phones in Melbourne's far southeast after yet another outage for the major telecommunications company. It says vandals damaged a cable causing the failure. Jane McNamara is a spokesperson for Optus.
Our technicians have been on site since early this morning. We do have, you know, that photo evidence, very clear that there has been a cut made. We know copper has been removed from the pit and we have contacted Victorian police.
The outage lasted 3 hours, preventing Optus customers on the Mornington Peninsula and Frankston from making phone calls. One of the customers affected was Rebecca.
I became aware, I went to make a call this morning and it didn't really work, but I didn't really pay attention to it because I was hustling and bustling at work. And then I got a text message from Optus at about 11:30, I think, explaining what was happening.
Rebecca says a few hours later, she got another text telling her she'd been reconnected.
Advising it had been restored, so I didn't really have time to be disturbed too much because I was so busy at work.
Optus says the vandals struck at 8 o'clock this morning. They attempted to steal valuable copper in a concrete Telstra pit, commonly found on footpaths in suburban areas. But Optus spokesperson Jane McNamara says instead they cut a critical underground fibre cable.
If people were needing to make a 000 call, there was backup coverage, so people's calls have been able to get through.
000 Victoria says as of 3 o'clock this afternoon, it hadn't been informed of anyone being unable to connect to the national 000 line. It's the third Optus outage in 3 months. During the 000 outage involving Optus in September, two people died. It's prompted calls from telecommunications experts to rethink the way Australia stores critical communications infrastructure. Associate Professor Mark Gregory is a telecommunications expert from RMIT.
An aerial fibre cable connects one region to another, entered an underground pit in the area where it connects to customers, and it was in that pit that they found that vandals had cut the cable. An aerial fibre cable is one that transits through power poles or electrical transmission lines rather than transiting underground.
He says a lot of the copper was removed by telcos a few years ago, and to deter people from attempting to steal copper, the federal government should consider asking the telecommunications companies to put stickers on the pits saying there's no copper inside.
Indicating to potential thieves that are looking for copper that opening the pit and cutting the cables in their search for copper would be pointless because there is no copper in the pit.
Federal Communications Minister Annika Wells released a statement acknowledging the outage, saying under Australian law, any 000 calls made by affected customers must fall back onto other carriers' networks where available. The federal opposition has questioned how a group of vandals were able to cut fibre cables in the first place. Melissa McIntosh is the Shadow Communications Minister.
This can't keep happening. We might feel relieved today that people didn't lose their lives, but we shouldn't be, you know, on edge every time there is an outage, and it's happening more and more.
Associate Professor Bill Corcoran works in the Department of Electrical and Computer Systems Engineering at Monash University. He says as we rely more on our mobile phones, it's becoming more important than ever to have a reliable backup plan.
It might be that, you know, we're going to need to change the way we approach thinking about this infrastructure as it becomes more critical to us, and start mandating more things, or, you know, thinking about things in different ways.
Jacinta Allen is Victoria's Premier.
And it is deeply concerning to hear reports that there are too many people in our community experiencing an outage that may be impacting their ability to connect to emergency services. So I have requested urgent advice on this.
The Victorian Premier, Jacinta Allen. That report from Kathleen O'Connor. In the South Australian outback, police have again failed to find any trace of 4-year-old Gus Lamont, who went missing on his family's sheep station 2 months ago. They've been conducting a fourth official search for the little boy, and this time the focus was on 6 mine shafts a few kilometres from the family's homestead. Reporter Rachel Merritt has been monitoring the search, which has been conducted in hot, dry and windy conditions. She spoke to me from the small town of Yunta, about 4 hours' drive northeast of Adelaide.
So these 6 mine shafts, they're located roughly between 5.5 and 12 kilometres from the family's homestead. Now, police have previously told us that they weren't aware of the location of these mine shafts, and they're in part of the property that police had not searched on foot. So that was the main reason why police on Monday told us that they were going to renew the search for missing Gus with the focus on these mine shafts. Now, that has been completed. We've been told police have found no new evidence which could lead to the whereabouts of Gus. Now, some of these were relatively shallow, we're told, but others were up to 20 metres deep. And on this renewed search, police came with specialist equipment and specialist officers to really delve deep into these mine shafts to rule out the theory that Gus could have potentially fallen down one.
Rachel, this has been such a huge search. Has any explanation been given as to why police weren't made aware of these mine shafts earlier?
Sam, we haven't been told as to why police weren't aware of these mine shafts, although along with searching these shafts, they're as well looking at several areas surrounding the homestead as well. Now, these are located up to 10 kilometres from the homestead, and they fall outside of the 5-kilometre radius, which has already been searched extensively. This, of course, now being the fourth time that police have returned to the property. Of course, in the early days of Gus going missing, the focus was really in the vicinity surrounding that homestead. We had police, SES volunteers, as well as the Australian Defence Force searching not just on ground, but we had drones and choppers searching from the air. And then, of course, at the end of October, police told us that they would return to the property to drain a nearby dam. That was to rule out the chance that Gus may have drowned.
And a terribly difficult time for Gus's family. They've understandably been remaining out of the public eye. Is much being said about how they're holding up?
We have not been able to speak to the family, and police have told the media that they do wish to maintain their privacy. So we've been in the town of Yunta for the past few days now, so we have been able to speak to locals. And really the sentiment here is that there was quite a lot of hope riding that this new search could bring some sense of closure, not just, of course, for the community, but for the family as well, as this search has now stretched into the 2-month mark.
So what do you think is going to happen now, Rachel, in the search for Gus? Are there any new theories at all as to what might have happened to the little boy?
So police, they have not ruled out the chance that they will return here. Police have a dedicated task force, Horizon, which will continue to investigate the disappearance of Gus. Now, whether or not they will return here in the future for a fifth search remains to be seen.
Rachel Merrish reporting for us from the South Australian outback town of Yanta. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. In the West African nation of Nigeria, humanitarian groups are slamming authorities for failing to stop the mass abductions of children. More than 250 students and a dozen teachers are still missing after being abducted from a private Catholic school by gunmen a few days ago. The Islamic extremist group Boko Haram has been responsible for kidnappings before, but it's not clear which group is behind this latest crime. Educators there say there's widespread fear across the country and school attendance rates are dropping. Tanya Dendrinos prepared this report.
13-year-old Stephen Samuel was one of more than 300 students kidnapped from a Catholic school in Nigeria on Friday.
When the gunmen came, they meet us sleeping and they wake up us and they tell us we should lie down.
He says he was tied up and marched into the forest with his classmates, but found an opportunity to escape.
I run. He did not see me. I run. I start going. I don't know where I should follow. I don't know the place that I can follow.
50 students have reportedly been reunited with their families, but other parents are desperately waiting for the return of their children. Reverend Bulustawa Ioana is the Catholic Bishop of Contagora Diocese.
It's a very tragic event that happened to us, or incident that happened to us. It has really affected many families, and so many are traumatized.
No group has claimed responsibility for the abductions as yet. Medina Maishanu is a BBC reporter who's on the ground in Nigeria. She says she interviewed the police commissioner of Niger State.
He was very sceptical about the number of the students that have said to escape from the unknown gunmen then and gone back home. So there's still a lot of confusion, and also the parents are very anxious. When I left in front of the school in Papiru community, the parents had camped outside of the school waiting, desperately and anxiously waiting, and they felt abandoned because they felt like the security agencies aren't really doing much to help the students that were abducted and to also make sure that the area is secure. When I went there, there was basically no security, even after those students were abducted.
Authorities say tactical squads have been deployed and the Nigerian president has approved the recruitment of an additional 30,000 police officers. The Niger State government said on Friday the school had ignored an instruction that boarding schools should be closed because of intelligence indicating a high chance of attacks, but questions have been raised over whether or not such a warning had been issued. Helen Ware is a professor of peace studies at the University of New England.
The Nigerian army is not very well equipped. It, like everything else, almost everything else in Nigeria, it can be very corrupt. You can have a situation where the soldiers don't even have boots, let alone more sophisticated equipment.
Friday's attack on St Mary's School was the latest in a recent spate of school abductions. Officials today confirming two dozen girls who were abducted from a government boarding school in Nigeria's Kebbi State have been released.
I think poverty is behind it. I think kidnapping for ransom for money becomes an attractive alternative. It's a system in which there's a great deal of corruption. Also, there is an element, people have probably heard of Boko Haram, which roughly translated means Western education is forbidden, it's taboo. So there's an additional, I think, often just an excuse, but you could also say that some people genuinely believe that Western education is something very corrupt and that would be a reason for attacking schools.
Boko Haram is a Sunni Islamic extremist group which has carried out a series of attacks, including the Chibok schoolgirls kidnapping, which captured the world's attention in 2014. The recent incidents have forced the closure of many schools. Amnesty International says the Nigerian authorities' persistent failure to address the repeated abductions of school children and teachers in several parts of northern Nigeria is putting the education of a generation of children at risk.
Tanya Dendrinos. Now to the deepest jungles of Indonesia, where researchers have located one of the rarest flowers in the world. It's a subspecies of Indonesia's famous giant corpse flower, those blooms often called the stinking corpse lily because they smell like rotting flesh. This particular variety, though, hasn't been spotted for more than a decade. The Indonesian conservationist who tracked down the bloom hopes it will become a symbol to promote the conservation of its rainforest home. Tim Swanston prepared this report.
Deep in the tropical jungles of West Sumatra, a team of conservationists and rangers are on a quest. They're searching for an extremely rare flower, Indonesia's famous stinking corpse lily, which can grow up to a metre wide and weigh more than 6 kilograms.
This is a nearly impossible mission, since the last time people saw that species and publicised or posted it on social media was in 2011.
Septian Andriki, or Deki as he prefers to be known, is an Indonesian conservationist, and for 13 years he's been hunting for Rafflesia hasselti. Earlier this year, a ranger in remote western Sumatra had stumbled upon the flower buds in the early stages of its life cycle. Now they've trekked a full day through incredibly dense jungle to find it, risking tiger attacks along the way. And after hours of walking, they arrive just in time.
It's okay. We did it. We found it.
Deki was overcome with emotion.
I couldn't hold my feelings any longer. It was an explosion, a mix between joy and sentimentality. Waiting 13 years is a long time, plus a 23-hour trip, taking tiger attack risk, nearly dead phone batteries. I could not say any more and broke down in tears. I said, God is great, God is great, because the blooming took a very long time, and that night it was relatively quick.
Also on the trek was Dr. Chris Thorogood, the Deputy Director of the University of Oxford Botanic Garden. He's been working with Deki for several years.
There are 40 or so species of Rafflesia, the world's largest flowers, but this one is a super rare one. Hardly anyone has seen it. And to my mind, it's the most beautiful. It's kind of like white with these big red spots and then the reverse of that on the petals. It's just crazy.
Finding Rafflesia hasselti was already a big challenge, but timing their trip was even more difficult.
The buds of this flower take several months, up to 9 months actually, to mature. And then when the flower opens, it only actually stays open to him for a few days. So the chances of having this encounter that we did are so unlikely.
And waiting next to the flower in the darkness for more than an hour, in the middle of a well-known Sumatran tiger habitat, Deki, Chris and their guide Iswandi witnessed something incredible.
And so we sat there as dusk came and watched the flower open in front of our very eyes at about the same speed as the moon rises in the sky. So you can't quite see it, but you know it's happening. And by the time we left, it was almost open. And that was just an absolutely magical experience, and one that will remain living in my memory diamond sharp for the rest of my life, I think.
For Deki, this flower symbolises what he's spent his life fighting for. Indonesia's rainforests have suffered greatly from deforestation, a fate he hopes this patch of forest will avoid.
We can do ecotourism with forest, as one of the ideas is to have sustainable tourism. The worst is that they turn this social forest permit into a palm oil plantation, a monoculture plant, or coffee. So ecotourism is a solution for the farmer. Seeing Rafflesia is a very interesting alternative.
Despite the amazing achievement, the trip has generated some controversy. A post about the flower was shared by the University of Oxford, but was met with criticism among some users who were furious that it did not name the Indonesian conservationists and guides involved. The University of Oxford has told the ABC it was delighted to be working with its Indonesian colleagues and that one of its goals is the support of local conservation heroes. This is Tim Swanston reporting for PM.
What amazing emotion from Deki on discovering that flower in Sumatra. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. The podcast of the full program is available on the ABC Listen app. And that's where you'll find ABC News Daily with Sam Hawley each weekday morning. It takes a close look at a single issue in the news each day. Today's episode looks at the controversy triggered by the Bureau of Meteorology's new website. That includes both the scathing criticism from those who say it's just not up to the job, as well as the news that the site cost taxpayers $96 million rather than the original estimate of $4 million. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Living in Australia, we're all pretty invested in the weather. So when the Bureau of Meteorology, yes, the bomb, changed its website, almost everyone had a view about it. And that was before we realised, they'd forgotten to tell us, it cost close to $100 million to build it. Today, the ABC's lead rural reporter in Victoria, Justine Longmore, on the website debacle. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.